Good morning. If
a couple of people here who haven't been here the last few weeks. So what I embarked on an informal series of talks on the unperfect practice of the perfections. This is the Buddhist version of Peter Piper, right? Picked a peck. So I remember how it first came up, maybe several weeks ago. I guess I was talking about patience, and I talked before about how I learned that the only way I could practice patience was being patient with my impatience. And I saw from that an entry into looking at the practice of the six perfections, because patience is one of the perfections, as the unperfect practice of the perfections, because otherwise they seem unavailable or admirable but very distant, often a really nice white cloud somewhere, because none of us are really geared to practice to the perfections, to do something perfectly. So turns out, you see, that the practice of the six perfections, which is a description of the bodhisattva way of life. How do you, what is it to be a bodhisattva? Well, this is a description of six, not just qualities, but ways to go about expressing that. To be a bodhisattva is generosity and a moral life and patience and elbow grease, it's virya, vigor or enthusiasm or effort, jhana, meditation, and wisdom, prajna, as in the Prajna Paramita, the Heart Sutra. So these are descriptions of, you might say qualities, but they're more qualities as activities. But this bodhisattva way of life is designed for imperfect beings. So really it's about the unperfect practice of the perfections. They're not intended to be perfectly practiced because you're an unperfect being. So the only way to perfectly practice the perfections is as an unperfect being. Right? They're intended for us. So I talked about the unperfect practice, the unperfect awakening mind, because of the foundation of the bodhisattva way of life, of these six qualities or activities, ways of being going forward as a bodhisattva. At their base is what's called bodhicitta, the awakening mind, the mind that aspires to awaken to reality so that the practice, say, of generosity isn't just, well, now I'm generous, now I'm not. Now I am, now I'm not. We kind of live like windshield wipers, kind of jerked around by our minds. And so to have it not just be, well, I happen to be generous today and not tomorrow, and we get confused not only by the switching around, but by the back and forth inconsistency in our approach to life. So the bodhisattva way of, say, of practicing the unperfect practice of generosity is to say, I'm aiming at waking up to reality in a way that I can find a ground for some kind of generosity. Oh, the first thing I need to be generous with is my own inconsistency about generosity. Right? So that from where we are now, going in the direction of a coherence, we have to start by being generous with our incoherence. So I talked about the awakening mind, and I talked about generosity, and that I did last week. Well, anyway, I want to marching right along, because I've talked about patience throughout all that, too. I wanted to talk about the unperfect practice of the perfection of meditation, right, of jhana. Remembering that unperfectly is the only possible way to practice the perfections of the bodhisattva way, because here we are. And this is who it is meant for. So, jhana paramita, perfection of meditation, or the completeness of meditation, or the wholeness of it. But really, it's what is the wholeness of meditative practice for unperfect beings with wobbly, wavering minds? The only kind that this is intended for. So how is it intended for us when it's couched in this language of perfection? How do unperfect beings sit on the ground of awareness of non-dual reality? Well, we don't have Manjushri on the altar and one of the classic figures on a Buddhist altar, particularly a Zen altar, is Manjushri, Bodhisattva, sort of cosmic metaphoric Bodhisattva, with a sword. Bodhisattva of wisdom carries a sword for cutting through illusion, for cutting through delusions. We can do that. It's not saying, and then there are no more. It's saying, well, we can do that. Can we cut through ideas of duality, of a separate self? Can we cut through the clinging, the urge to cling? That cutting through has to be founded on seeing it. That's why the whole of this practice is founded on the awakening mind. It's about seeing even that we have illusions, and then seeing that they lead us to a divided self and to clinging, and to seeing that that's painful suffering, and that there's a possibility of not being completely swamped in that. Those are the practices of the awakening mind, or the practice of the sixth perfection of wisdom. When we do our zazen of just sitting, we call it practice realization, that to do this practice of just sitting is to do the practice of realizing non-reality as it is. Not necessarily in your conscious mind, because your conscious mind has ideas about it that are your ideas. The zazen of just sitting aims us at being non-dual, at having a unified field of awareness, while being a person of coming and going mind. It might say, just as we can call this the practice for unperfect beings, it's perfectly human to have a mind that comes and goes. It's completely human. It's how human minds work. So it's something we have to work with, not work exactly against. When we do zazen and there is going in a direction of a unified field of awareness, there is also experiencing this in some fashion. We tend to run those together. We say, well, I don't experience myself as having unified field of awareness or non-dual reality, so it's not happening. We're running two different, it's apples and oranges a little bit. There is what is happening, and then there is our experience of it, which is very important. I would not belittle our experience of it. But I'm here when I'm not aware of it, right? I can be here completely distracted and out to lunch, and I'm still here. So what I'm consciously aware of, my experience right now, is not the whole, is an aspect of my being here. It's not the whole of it. So we don't want to say, if I'm doing zazen and I don't experience non-dual reality, that I'm just not doing zazen. Our conscious experience is one aspect of it. It's a very important aspect because it informs the poor benighted conscious mind. So we want whatever is going on in zazen to come into some form of experience, and to have some understanding of that experience, so that it informs then our conscious mind, which then informs our future mind and actions. So when you sit down and do zazen, sometimes you feel there's a feeling of satisfaction or of calm or of peace, and you say, aha! Right? There we're having an experience, or there's an experience of I'm just scrolling around in my mind and getting more and more unhappy by the minute, like being awake at 3 a.m. Those are our experiences of where our conscious mind of saying, well, what's happening here? Using the sort of the data bank of previous experiences is meeting some less consciously defined experience, which is meeting what's actually happening. We are always living in many more layers or levels than of awareness than we are consciously aware of. So this zazen of just sitting is about setting down the war of the divided self, again, self divided against itself and against the world, and this idea, and I'm not meaning this idea, and the judgmental mind, setting that down. And sometimes, what if it's being in some sense set down even when you're not actually consciously aware of it? Is it only I feel good? It's not the sum total of the zazen you're doing. Is I feel good, I feel bad, is what I'm trying to say. More is happening. That's important, too, but that's a lot more is happening than just I'm feeling good in my zazen, I'm not feeling good in my zazen. You know, that good zazen, bad zazen habit that creeps in so easily. So, when you sit down in zazen, a unified moment happens. The occasion occurs of you being an undivided life. This is good for you and good for the planet. Secondly, it has consequences that you know. In other words, your experience. You can have some conscious awareness of what's going on. Some. And you can learn from that and be guided by that. You can be encouraged to sit down again and do some more zazen another time. And then it has consequences that you are not aware of, that are outside your conceptual awareness and yet enter your life because this is something you are doing. So, you know, almost anything we do, a lot more is happening than we're consciously aware of. So in doing zazen, you're saying there's going to be more and maybe less going on here than I'm aware of. And so I want to have some sense that it's likely to be a reasonably good thing to do. And you sit down and you try it out. We don't know before we do zazen how it's going to be. I don't even know one day how it's going to be when I sit down. But I have an experience now of knowing that it's, generally speaking, a worthwhile thing to do, regardless of what my conscious mind thinks today. It's a good thing to do. So when you sit down, the life of, even if you can't say, you can't say necessarily, I have a unified field of awareness. We've already divided the world up into pieces by saying there's me having this experience. But there is or isn't an experience of a unified field of awareness, say, just to use one term for it. And yet there's the activity of going in that direction is happening. That's a good thing. It's a good thing for you. It's a good thing for the planet. Then that going in that direction, you can call it of settling your life or of being here and now or being all these aware, all these different terms. And you should pick one term up and then throw it away for a while and pick up another one. Don't get hung up on any one of them because they're all trying to describe something that's larger than what goes on in the words. So something is happening in that aiming at being present or at being awake or at being aware. Something is happening that's good for you and good for the planet. There's a moment of a going in the direction of peace happening. You don't know how big or small that is. It isn't about big and small. And then it is influencing your conscious mind, and you might actually have some enjoyment or some awareness or some self-reflection, all different kinds of conscious experiences. And then it has consequences in you that you aren't consciously aware of, but that influence you. And this is the aspect I want to talk about, the undivided awareness of zazen. I usually don't. You know, I'm very much focusing usually on sitting with whatever mind is present. Just, okay, you're feeling confused. That's fine. You do zazen. Don't think about the quality of your mind. And just do it. But, you know, your painful states of mind, the lack of calm. I'm always encouraging the acceptance of all of those kind of crazy states. I do that to help get us around, to subvert the judgmental mind that says, oh, this is bad zazen because I'm caught up in my thoughts today. Because that judgmental mind is one of the worst enemies we have of our practice. When you realize at some point that you've been just swirling around in your mind, just somehow out to lunch, and then you say, oh, I've done it again. You've just locked yourself back into that same prison cell. And so to avoid that, I say, don't do that. Just don't be concerned about how good and how bad and bring all those painful states of mind along so as not to be judging them and getting caught up in that. But I don't mean that zazen is a noisy affair in itself. I feel I sometimes overemphasize the, the painful and confused states of mind, and it sounds as if Zazen is going to be just a noisy, confused affair. There is calm and there is peace, but it's not the one we have in our mind. So you sit down, and suddenly you're aware of a dust storm. That's why I found, I sat down, it was this morning or yesterday, there was a dust storm. And all I could, there was nothing to be, seen. Everything is kind of brown and swirling, and maybe you can hear flapping in the distance, and you feel a wind press against you. The world is this a vastness of a dust storm of thoughts and ideas. And sometimes the sun comes out and those bits of dust in the air sparkle and you say, well, this is really kind of cool. And then the sun is gone and it's just a vastness of dust swirling. And then the wind gets strong and it kind of beats on you and it feels prickly and dust gets in your eyes and it's very unpleasant. It can be pleasant, it can be unpleasant, but it's swirling and you can't really see very far. You say, well, this is what it's like. This is my life. It's brown, it's swirling. And then if you keep looking and experiencing that, it starts to have more qualities to it. There's the wind, there's the sound of something flapping, and there's the feel of it against your face, there's the different shades of brown in this swirling dust cloud. And then you're aware of yourself having a body. And Zazen is a body practice. We come back and we're aware suddenly that we have a body and a breath, and that something is here. And with that experience of being here, suddenly that is no longer the whole of reality, and the dust storm starts to subside a little bit and drop down a little bit, and you have that experience suddenly of there's a bit of clear sky. We all know that. Suddenly the Zazen is a little bit like a cleared sky. And then the dust storm rises up again, and then it settles down again a little bit. It fills the world. And then it drops down and there's a vast sky that clarity or a vast sky when the wind settles down, the dust settles down a little bit, we call peace or we call calm or we call satisfied or settled or tranquil or happy. We call it all different kinds of words, something very positive. There's a sense of a wider nature. And over time, we find that then even in the swirl of the cloud, some way, at least on a cellular, if not very conscious level, we know that this is a state of mind I'm in. It may be pervasive, it may be deep, it may be compelling, but it is a state of mind. It is not the whole ball of wax. Already it doesn't have quite the same grip. Or you sit down to do Zazen, and find yourself in this great dust storm. Well, you know, already you're seeing more than you were, because the fact is that dust storm, you already were in that maelstrom when you were walking and talking and coming into the zendo and thinking about your laundry list and 10 other things. But we are so caught up in it that we're not even aware that we are in the midst of a dust storm. So you sit down, you say, oh my God, how come my mind gets so busy when I sit down? Well, of course, that's not what's happening. So you're actually able to see yourself having a mind when you sit down. These are all, in fact, the practice of jhana, of meditation and wisdom for imperfect beings. All of that is. So even in a dust storm, sitting, being aware that previously you were not in a dust storm, or with a clear sky, aware that the dust swirls are still moving around down here, and that you don't know when, you know, whether they'll come. They may never come back up again, but that's none of your business. Right now, you're here and you're present. You take another breath, and you take another breath. Then, guess what? The storm comes back up. The mind works that way. And I think everyone who sits more than a little bit knows that if you say, my mind was clear and sunny and there was a vast blue sky and now it's gone and I'm caught in this dust storm and I want to get that back, it doesn't work. That's our grasping mind. It doesn't work to say, how do I get back that peace, sense of peace I had? It's the other way around. That sense of peace I had informs the fact that now I'm in a dust storm and there seem to be alternatives. So you might say, what did I do to get to the condition of feeling peace? What do I do now, informed by my past? What do I do now about being in the middle of a dust storm? Oh, right, returning to my body and breathing and settling here and now. My awareness widens and suddenly it's not all a dust storm. So we speak of aiming at being present and aware. I talk about aiming at tranquility and calm. I never talk about that because you'll wind up aiming at an idea that you have about what that should look like and feel like back in the old dust storm. If instead you say, oh, right, the thing to do here in this dust storm of my life is to aim at being present here and now, even though it feels like the wrong thing to do because I want to get out of this dust storm. The only way to get out of the dust storm is to be here and now with more going on than just the dust storm, and then it settles down. And it feels counterintuitive sometimes. Because I'm not saying go into your dust storm and experience your suffering. No, I'm saying return to your body, your breath, your aiming at being present here and now beyond your idea of whether right now that's a stupid idea or not. Beyond your idea about it. And you find that you are more likely than to be here and now with your mind and body all here and now, and the dust storm settles down. And that we then experience something we call calm or peace or tranquil. I have no objection with calling it that, as long as those are provisional names and not goals for something that large that is happening. Aiming at being present and aware and aiming at peace and tranquility are more different than they sound. Because one has a preconceived idea and agenda and leads to judgment, and the other, being present and aware, when you are present and aware, you are dwelling in a unified field. That may not be the word you'd use for it. You might say, oh, there's a sense of being present, or there's a sense of being aware. It's happening before you have those names. Even those are already kind of labels for it. The being present or being aware has already taken hold, and then the mind works and says, oh, this is the feel or the flavor of present and aware. And you take a breath and you try not to get caught up in thinking about that, to return to going to being present and aware. But we need to do this process of saying, oh, this is my experience. What will I call my experience? And then we need to let that go and drop back to the experience itself, and beyond that to the activity itself. So Zazen is this activity of being present aware. Then there's an experience of it, and then there's a talking about the experience of it. And all those three levels of layers of it get incorporated or integrated as and inform you as you go forward. That's Katagiri called it, don't poke your head in it. That was his phrase for this. It's saying, don't poke your head in whether I'm calm or whether I'm not. You're already doing the activity of aiming yourself at being present and aware before you have an experience you can call by any name, and after you have an experience you call by any name. And that's the sense in which it's, as he would say, it's none of your business. I didn't really like that. I thought it was exactly my business, right? But in some sense, it's none of your business to have to, you don't have to say this is this kind of experience and that is that kind. The activity itself, engaging the activity of Zazen as just sitting, is engaging in this aim to wake up and be present and aware in life just as it is, beyond and under your conscious understanding, and then it influences your conscious understanding. Even if your mind never stops going for 30 minutes, You sit down for zazen, and for 30 minutes, your mind goes. Sometimes this happens. This happens to me still, so I can't imagine it doesn't happen to other people. Still during that 30 minutes, and they may not be very pleasant ones then, but still during that those 30 minutes, there is a way in which you know yourself intimately. You aren't just doing your busy mind life. You're sitting still in the middle of it. It is already a different, and in informing, it informs your life about what it, about this busyness. And in fact, you're not completely given over to it. Your mind is going, but your body isn't. Part of you is settling down. And so then there's an experience of an intimacy with your own life, even in the middle of the mind going. In some sense, your life settles during that time, even though the mind is going and it may not be what we call pleasant or satisfactory. Often, there are the times when what my image for the day of the dust storm settles and there's a sense of a clear, open sky. We may experience or not experience different kinds of awarenesses or images or metaphors for our experience, or not much of anything of that sort. This time of a peaceful or integrated awareness, and even you may think, well, what if it only lasts two breaths? Well, counting is not what it's about. It comes and it goes. And allowing the going as well as the coming is part of what allows it to come back. If we clutch and say, I don't want this nice experience to go away, it's already gone. We say, we allow with open hands that it goes, knowing that we have the way to re-access it, which is to sit with some patience in a suitable time and place. It will come. It's like when I lived in my cabin in Worthington one winter, I had a bird feeder outside, and then I decided I wanted, but the chickadees came a lot. I love chickadees. And so I went outside and sat down on a rock and put some bird seed on my head and on my hands and on my shoulders. And he said, sat there, you know. Luckily, there wasn't anyone else around. Eventually, they started flying nearby, you know. But and then they would zoom away and come and zoom away. Eventually, they came, and not all of them, but the bolder ones would come and zoom and cat take all the seed and run away. And eventually, some of them would actually come down and sit like on a little twig here, my finger being a little twig, and eat a seed with aplomb. And others were still too nervous to do it. If I had done this in the middle of the road, I don't think the chickadees would have come. If I had done this in New York City where I grew up, where there weren't any chickadees, it wouldn't have happened. There's a suitable time and place for that allows something to come forth. And so there's a setting and a situation that encourages the chickadee, including the fact that they're hungry. Right? It's winter, they're hungry. In the middle of July, they would say, you can sit there all you like, lady. I've got better things to do. Or I've got so many seeds secreted. What they do apparently is little bits of seed and little bits of food, chickadees specifically, but many of the small birds secrete many of them in little bits of bark and on little tree branches. So that when they wake up in the morning, I've always wondered, you know, they wake up in the morning, they're hungry, and these tiny little bodies, they've got to get some fuel in there. They don't have big reserves. And what if there isn't something right away available? Are they all going to fall over dead? No, they have little tiny food caches that they go and visit and get breakfast from. So I became breakfast, the cafeteria. So it's not that at all times, under all circumstances, your life will settle down, or you will experience calm or awareness or feel a sense of integrated life. There's what is the time and setting for something to happen that I both know about and don't know about, but has a value to it. And so we do zazen and put ourselves there, much the same way as sitting with some birdseed in my hand for the chickadees to come. And they do come. The chickadees do come, and the dust storms do settle. They come up again, and they go down again. And at some point, it becomes almost acceptable, I might say, perhaps, that it keeps rising up. The sense of the confusion and the disturbance and the carried away and the compelled. Almost or even acceptable because we know it as part of a rhythm. This is Tozen's statement that he is endlessly compelled by empty thought, and that this is his gateway to peace and to a kind of freedom. When he really accepted in his practice life, after many years of trying to do perfect zazen and perfect practice, that just perfect zazen. I mean, his life dedicated to zazen, just sitting, nothing else. Doesn't want to give talks. He does. He will come and give talks. Come sometime this summer and give some talks. He's willing, but he would really rather just sit zazen and read the Yomiuri Shimbun on the his computer. So here's a life really dedicated to this zazen, and you want to do it perfectly. I mean, if this is what your life is, you want to do it perfectly, and of course he couldn't, and he was just. It just becomes a tighter and tighter knot. And finally, he realized that he's endlessly compelled by empty thoughts. They are empty of having permanence and substance, but they are very real and they're very powerful as thoughts. And for the rest of his life, he's going to be compelled or carried away or deeply distracted by thoughts that are empty, because that's the only kind of thought there is. And when he realized that, he became free of the need to try to be perfect. And he could just do his zazen without adding to it the need, the judgment and the need to be perfect. So it is really important to not be thinking that we're supposed to try to be perfect. It's not just that we can't, it's not helpful. It's not conducive to this practice or as a human being. It's not conducive to the practice of perfection. Because the only way we're supposed to do it as is our imperfect being. So Tozen's practice of the perfection of jhana, of meditation, is to say, I'm hopelessly compelled by empty thought, and so now I'll sit down again and not mind that I can't be perfect, and freeing my energy to sit and to wake up and to accept being human. Sometimes the just sitting zazen is described as letting go of thoughts. Actually, quite a few of the less object-based meditations are described as letting go of thoughts. You know, an object meditation is maybe a concentration meditation where you have a visualization or a chant or a candle or incense where there's something, or your breath, something to focus on. And that can be very, very helpful to have a sense of concentrated calm and peace while you keep attention gathered in on this one point so that it isn't going in 10 directions. And when your mind isn't going in 10 directions, there is a sense of gathered in or settled or peace and calm. And that's fine. I do that in the dentist chair. I go to my nice Zen dentist and... who was originally ordained as a priest at San Francisco Zen Center many years ago. And I go to my dentist and I do a concentration meditation so I can enjoy my time in the dental chair. Or airplanes taking off. Sitting in hospital rooms or hotel rooms, frankly. There are times when a concentration practice is just perfect. I think we should have that as one of our tools. But it's very important that this kind of zazen that we do, when we do this here, that we don't need to have an object. In fact, we need to, if anything, not have an object. It's a bigger practice, because it's a practice about your whole life happening when you aren't focusing it on some one thing to achieve a calm state. Wonderful as that, and useful and productive as those are. Zazen is a time for something different from that. If you try to cut off your thoughts, chop, chop. I mean, Tozen's a teacher originally in a monastery in Japan said, you should chop off your head. He said, what do I do about my, I'm thinking all the time. And the guy said, chop off your head, put it beside you and sit. Maybe a little bloody image for some people, but if you leave the blood out, he was saying, you know, cut off your conceptual mind and set it down beside you. Well, I might find that if I cut off thoughts, they tend to spring up even more. It's like pruning, and you get bushier growth. If you push them away or sit on them, they rise up. We all know how our thoughts and feelings and problems that we push into a kind of an unconscious, subconscious place, they don't go away. They have an energy there, and they seethe, and they surge, and finally they come bounding up. It's not going to. Your thoughts are like that, whether in zazen and out. So instead, we say, drop them, let them go, let them melt back into the ground of life. But we aren't just letting go of thoughts. In letting go of the focus and preoccupation, we might say, the preoccupation with thoughts and dust motes and the feel of the wind on my face and the brown and I like it and I don't like it. And without being caught up in that preoccupation, life widens out. We see differently. We experience something that's really ourselves being alive. We are returning to the awareness of awareness of being on the original ground of our life. That's one of the phrases I use for it. Find your own phrase for it. Find different phrases. That's one of the reasons we read more than one Zen book. Basically, they're all saying, to some degree, the same thing. Right? They're all talking from different vantage points. And it's slightly different, you know. The different view matters. Differences matter. But in many ways, they're just different windows on one reality. When we let go of the focus on our preoccupations, another image that came to me was of my thoughts as being like, I call them thought bots. They're like those little robots, this little vacuum cleaner robot that runs around the floor of your house theoretically cleaning it. Of course, I don't think it does that, but it's kind of a nice toy. So they're thought bots. You know, there's all these thoughts going around. They're colorful, they're noisy, some of them chime, some of them have bells. They're running around all the time, and they seem to fill the world, the space in front of you and your mind, and you get caught up in them. And if you take a breath and discover that you are here, in fact, there's a lot of airspace between those thought bots. They're not there. If you focus on them, they fill the world. If you focus more widely, they're just one of many things that's going on. And they tend to sort of settle down and run around down here. Letting go of thoughts is a way to describe what we're doing as we are returning to our life as it really is. We're doing something that is just sort of the moment we say, consciously, here I am having thoughts, and my conscious experience is I'm letting go of thoughts, or I'm dropping thoughts. Or you might experience, call it dropping body and mind. Whatever you call it from the perspective of here I am having thoughts and I'm not going to be so completely preoccupied with them. What happens then is that in not being so preoccupied by them, we discover that we're in a much larger world. And we always were there. And discovering that over and over and over and over and over, each time there's a great pleasure in that, really, a satisfaction to discover ourselves to be larger than this craziness of our colorful, noisy thought bots. And eventually, gradually, and suddenly and slowly, suddenly and gradually, it It infiltrates your life. We call this the sudden school. It's a sudden school in which we also have gradual changes. It's a sudden school because this world of being already completely here now is already here. And at any moment, you wake up to it, and then we forget it. And at any moment, you wake up to it, and then we forget. So each moment of being aware, of being present here and now, is in a sense suddenly returning to what's already here. This is the vastness of your life is already here. When we have this precious way to perhaps access that, to act it out, and to experience it, and to know it, and then to forget it again. And it's here to keep doing. One of the problems with talking about Zazen in terms of what you might see as going on in it is that it tends to create more thought thoughts. It tends to create a sense of permanence or reality to states, real states going on, or realness of experiences. And we forget that all of these states and all of our experiences are empty in a very important way. That they're empty of permanence, they're empty of being static, they're free of that. Empty is really also a word for free. Free of being static and permanent. Your life is free of being static and permanent. Your thoughts and your experiences are free of being static and permanent. And we forget that because we get caught up and our judging and preconceived and mind of conception and believing in that my life is a dust storm, my life is a world of thought bots, noisy and whirring and banging. So we need ways to remind ourselves that we are already living a much larger life than we are aware of, so that we can then also not only be incoherently in that, but be coherent by living in accord with that larger reality. And then we experience that perhaps as peace or calm. But any one set of words about it, we have to throw away. So then we throw that away and we return to doing our Zazen, which is returning to ourselves, returning to earth, returning to life itself. Returning to emptiness, though that this may not be how we experience it. You know, and in Zen, we usually use a more positive flavored language than the seemingly negative flavored language of emptiness or of the Heart Sutra, which is why the Heart Sutra is often difficult for people, sort of negative seeming language. So we say your true nature, your Buddha nature, oneness, suchness. You're just having a positive way to express what is also equally called emptiness, free of being static and fixed. So let's throw all the words away and do that way the perfect, unperfect practice of the perfections. Okay. Any thoughts about...